But yeah, it's recording.
Okay.
So that should be it.
Thank you.
So, yeah. So they'll require that. I was teaching for a while and I got to back off as a. So that I performed that. Pretty much teach. Yeah. You'll hear that one. Right, yeah. Yeah, right, exactly. And very important. Reason for the accreditation age. You know, I first started teaching at Tempe. There's great people that have. We're the second largest. I'm doing some research on shared services also. I'm pretty much a state of the union. I've gone as 20 state local for like 20 years, 25 years in that area. It's not what's federal every time. Board grant practice on. Yeah, probably so. Yeah. Years.
Yeah.
So the C program for AGA is now.
Yeah.
Rarely is it without or just set.
Well.
Yeah, this is your. Yeah.
Live with the Washington State.
Right. Tomorrow. Right. Yeah, we were pushing that in early days.
Yeah. Not many.
I mean, yeah. First, there's like. We had like.
And I. That is probably.
Necessarily.
That's one.
So.
I say no more than.
Is it anything else?
Now.
Or doing it now.
Now, that is the reason they don't.
So. Right, right.
Build yourself.
Right.
What happens. Is what happened here. Various.
Yeah. Right.
See, a four page. Four page.
Then, so it's. Number government.
Yeah. Doing well.
Well. I sort that.
Yeah.
Very useful. Very.
They are.
Yeah.
When you. My.
Yeah. Well, there's. There are two.
But on the other hand.
One thing you might have to do, I guess, is if they're doing like a big thing with that board, just kind of chem a little bit, but it's hard to get a good angle on that board. So I wouldn't worry. It'd be good if you're zoomed in. And you can see it. You can see it from here.
Oh, that's the fence. Damn.
Yeah.
Wrong way.
Yeah, you just gotta go up. Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. Okay.
Oh, I must be really blind because I couldn't see any of that.
It must
okay.
Be.
Yeah, that's really bad. It's really bad. I should have on glasses. Okay. Okay.
There you go.
Cool.
Yeah, this thing's so sensitive when it's zoomed in.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn the hair back up now for this.
Okay.
I guess it's still only 740. But after so long, I've been getting the past few weeks like at 6, and so by like 7:30, I'm like, day's halfway over, but then I look up and nobody else is here yet.
So disappointing.
I know. I've just done so much by 7:30. Where is everybody? It's not even 8 yet.
Sleep.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Oops, can't do it.
Yes.
You just hold this. Push the wire. Okay.
So sensitive. This young guy. See, they just kind of move it around a little bit.
I hope nobody can tell my directions.
I did. Nobody got last time.
Mm-hmm. No way.
I think Ellen and Belutis is going to be on.
Oh, okay.
Because he was going to be here in person.
Cool.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Yes, they have one.
Zoom. Yes. I've been for a while here.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of people.
Yeah.
So is your current record of Zoom program?
Yeah. We got. Oh, hi.
Is this your first session? Sure.
Okay. Well, yeah, I guess so.
Not only.
Oh, yeah, we did do it. I got it.
It is a chapter service. And we have to find out then. Is this yours?
Yes, it's for tomorrow. That's the paper.
Yep.
Other.
For example, so I like. Yes. Another. I. Right.
Yeah, but there's still.
I don't know what they want to do. Somebody's a boy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the artist is good.
He's very intense. He's actually a very.
Yeah, I love the most engaging game of all the games. They're like brainstorming ideas.
No problem.
I'm sorry.
I wanted to stop.
Yeah.
Has a lot of. No. I guess.
Look at the size of this.
Yeah.
But I think Jason.
What do you think? How you're. This is something that worked. My vision is X.
I do a lot.
Was there online?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Oh, yeah, I think we did that. Yeah. I do some teaching. MCI.
Yes.
They're really pushing. Online.
Oh, they are. We get more people to do it.
Well, I don't know. Two ways. So I should one is. Five.
Yeah, you say that. Yes.
Called.
Right.
And I've got some things.
My eggs.
Yeah. More time.
Yes, I see.
You are getting points.
Yeah.
I mean, just.
Don't have to.
Yeah.
Seriously, it's.
Ours too. Works at home.
I think they're trying to use the word. Work part of this. Yeah, there's not. Yeah, they have to say it. You know, I thought for counter films, but I got my problem. Yeah.
I can dump my bag back here. All right.
Yeah. Yes. Hi, nice to meet you. Was there someone from Napa that was going to fill in for Terry and Richard Houston?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you help?
Yeah, well, you know, it's so far.
Yeah.
It's really amazing the camaraderie and So, and it's actually been, like you said, of an acquisition, a merger. A lot of the CSRA solutions is going into all the business decisions. Oh, Nick. And Nick actually. Okay, well, Kentridge is going to lead up the defense side, which came from CSRA over. And then Nick actually resumed his position also. So, Thank you so very much. I will. I will shoot them an email and let them know I saw you. Okay?
Hiding back here.
How are you?
Thank you.
Great to see so many of you out there. It's early in the morning, coming out over to the Academy. We're really happy to be putting on this program on shared services with the Shared Services Leadership Coalition, the Association. We've got a great panel here with Leslie and Beth, speaking from OMB and GSA, some real leaders in this field. So I think we're set to have a really interesting morning here. Just very quickly, for those of you who are new to the Academy, we are an independent, nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. And one of the unusual things about us is we are chartered by the U.S. Congress with helping with challenging management problems at all levels of government, federal, state, local, and we even do some international work. So although we have a congressional charter, we are independent. We're not a governmental entity. So it's an interesting mix. We have a number of our fellows out here, including Leslie and Beth, a number of Dan and Mark and a bunch of others. I'm actually really glad to have you. Kind of the core of what we do is driven by our fellows who are elected by their peers for excellence in public administration. We have a very large federal component of fellows, but also state and local and academics, and also people who've moved into the private sector, typically have had an outstanding career before that in government. But even more and more, we have people coming in who are just working with governance from the private sector. We have a great deal of interest in shared services here at the Academy. One of our main areas of focus is business transformation.
We do a lot of work in organizational assessment and strategic planning. Stakeholder outreach is one of our strengths because we are seen as independent where we work, which is also important in a shared services environment where you're introducing shared services when you meet existing staff to have a feeling that they're dealing with an honest broker and very good staff as well. So we're really thrilled to be hosting this series, which we think is kind of a wave that's going to be really dominating as we go forward in terms of support services. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to John from Shared Services.
Cool. I'm John Marshall, and I'm the founder and CEO of the Shared Services Leadership Coalition. We are thrilled to be partnering this year with the National Academy of Public Administration and the Senior Executives Association on our breakfast seminar series. This is the third year that we've been doing this through SSLC. And we've done a really good job of connecting with the shared services community, the Zella community, as we affectionately call them. But we're thrilled this year to have SEA and NAPRA kind of help us extend our reach and take the message deeper into the federal executive community and help us get the message to people who might not be part of our mainstream community. So welcome to all, and we hope that you will become part of our mainstream community as we move forward. And this is the first this year in a series of six seminars looking at different aspects of shared services, different challenges in the areas of myth busting. Was our first session a few weeks ago. Today, innovation in governance. In future sessions, we'll look at fiscal accountability, acquisition, human capital, and emerging technology. So we're trying to give a cover of a whole landscape of functional areas and particular challenges, and we've picked areas to align with the SEA communities of interest so that we can really reach into that SEA mainstream and partner in delivering something of high value to not only the providers of shared services, but customers. And so thank you all again for coming today. Let me invite my partner, Bill Valdez, to come up and tell you a little bit more about SEA's take and today's program.
Come on, round of applause. Well, I'm Bill Valdez. I'm the president of the Senior Executive Association. And thank you all very much for coming to today's session. Can I see a show of hands of the SEA members over in the audience? Thank you very much for your service. Thanks for your membership. Conversation this morning was born out of a conversation that we had, SEA had, with John Marshall and his Shared Services Leadership Coalition, you know, a few months ago, where John came in and said, introduced himself and said, we've got this very dynamic group of companies that are trying to spread the gospel of shared services. And my immediate reaction was, because my view of shared services was colored by the experience that I had when I was at the Department of Energy. Anybody here from the Department of Energy? Where a shared services HR model was imposed on us from above. And it wasn't done in the most customer friendly process. And it really left a lot of scars on people like me who were consumers of HR services. We didn't see the benefit of it, we didn't see the cost savings, certainly didn't see the customer service. SLAs were basically on paper, they weren't actually implemented. So John said, your view and your experience is not necessarily the norm or what it should be. And so we started talking about what are the myths that surround shared services and like that. It can never work. It's always imposed to be top down. That the governance structures are frequently at odds with customer service requirements. So we cooked up this series of seminars and discussions to bust those. And now I'd say, John, you've actually convinced me that there is some value in shared services. And we're happy to be part of it. I'm myself. But what I think we're, you know, approaching the point where we are listening to the voice of the customer, and that's what SEA is. That we have members who have, you know, been consumers of shared services, but have not been actual, you know, really aware of the power of shared services. So that's the point of this whole session, and I look forward to your participation. We hope to make it very interactive. Don't be shy. Looking out in the audience, I see a lot of people are not shy. Be interactive and ask the kind of questions that need to be asked in a session like today. So with that, I'll turn it over to Jessica from IBM. Thanks.
So good morning, everybody. I'm Director of Public Sector Shared Services at IBM. So this has been sort of a journey of a lot of different organizations in Washington moving at different levels. And we've talked a lot about what is shared services. And this breakfast series is about to move to how you do it. Right, so it's the how, not the what. Having said that, because we're all on different levels, I want to take just a few minutes and just do a quick business case on what does a what look like? What is a shared service implementation look like? We have Leslie Field is here speaking about the PMA and the CAP goals and how they align with shared services. Beth Angerman, maybe you heard her or seen her, but today, Beth, you know, I asked Beth, let's just focus on governance today. There's a lot going on, but who does what, how, what is our relationship? Excuse me, and then a panel of sort of experts at different levels in the government of shared services talking about their experience. So that's sort of the goal here. Let me just quickly put up, all right, so this is sort of a quick lessons learned business case. So I spent many years at the MTA in New York, and it was 7 agencies, $16 billion, almost 3 billion riders. You know, one of the 4 or 5, 6 biggest systems in the world, very complicated, 70,000 employees, 50,000 retirees, 80 unions, 80 union negotiations, 1,600 benefit plans. So immensely complicated organization. I put this up just because this is sort of my metro slot. So if you look at the MTA over here, the MTA is a $15 billion company, very well used, heavily used, but if you notice, $6 billion a year comes through fares on the subway and buses, and about $2 billion comes from tolls on bridges and tunnels. That just sort of tells you in the most detailed, oldest, you know, I'm going to argue best run system in the country, Farebox only covers half of the cost of transit. So when you look at Metro and you complain every day, as we all do, about how it's doing, you have to just realize that unless it's heavily subsidized to what is really its role in making Washington work, the Metro is never going to be the first class transit that you really want it to be. So just as a way of thinking about this, this slide is what the MTA's 7 agencies looked like in December of 2010. So you can see there are a lot of PeopleSoft in here. And it's sort of these agencies said, hey, if you're going to start moving your shared service with us, we've already invested in PeopleSoft. But when you really thought about it, some of these were, they were all different instances. 8.8, 8.9, 9.0, 9.1, all very, very heavily customized. So in a sense, even though everybody said, you know, I'm PeopleSoft, what you were looking at was very different, and any upgrade had to be done over and over again for each agency. This is what it looked like on January 1st, 2011. We took down all of those systems, all of the PeopleSoft, GAC, all of the HR systems that we developed. We took them down, tested over a three-month period in the fall of 2010, and decommissioned them. We figured out every interface, every, you know, back and forth between a procurement system and PeopleSoft. So this was like, this meant at the end of the week of Hurricane Sandy, the CFO of the MTA could tell you how much overtime we paid, right? And I think we used, was me. But how much overtime? How many people are executive assistants? How many bus drivers are there that worked how many hours? All of this data that was never available as an enterprise was now available. This piece right here, every document that was live was digitized. Every piece of paper relating to each one of us in the government was digitized and put in a format so that it was retrievable. And all contact came through the contact center, anything about people in the agency. I put this up here because I don't want to get in. There will be a discussion at a breakfast on workforce. And it's a really important discussion. The two things most important right now are workforce and government. If you ask anybody in any agency or organization, what do you care about most? It's those two. So it turns out this was a 2008 effort. So think about 2008. There was a financial crisis. The MTA lost $1 billion in 6 months of subsidies. How are we going to run an organization? And what was a tremendous battle in the trenches about, I don't want to do it. I don't like shared services from the agency. Suddenly, how can you help me fulfill my mission when I have a hiring freeze? I cannot fill a position. Who's going to do the work? So this is a breakfast that's really a dynamic future breakfast that does. All I want to talk here is we did a bunch of HR, finance, IT functions. There was a president of one of the seven agencies that said, I will quit if you do procurement. I want to own procurement. If you're going to move procurement to a service center, I'm out of here. And we said, oh, we're not going to do it. But 2 years later, procurement has moved to the business service center, as has pension, treasury. And this is the really amazing one. 1,100 IT professionals across the MTA all are reporting to the executive director of the business service center. The IT is sort of, how does it work? Well, all of the PeopleSoft folks now are in one shop working for each agency that's got a PeopleSoft problem. This slide is just, I'm going to move just the 2 minutes to governance. So at the beginning of Go Live, people would pick up a phone and they'd call their president of the agency and say, you know what? Nobody's answering the phone at the service center. And as a result, anecdotally, every day my time was spent like putting out fires. Like, really? They didn't pick up the phone? So we put out this piece of data. Every 2 hours, this piece of data was available to every manager in the MTA. They knew down here, now this is 57 seconds to answer a call. The SLA was 30. All right, so right away, we're missing that SLA. 6% of the calls were being abandoned. This was supposed to be 1%. But when you look at it, 300 of 400 calls were about benefits. This was the 18th of October during open enrollment. So even the best of the SLAs, it was an open enrollment event that sort of took us off track here. On the other side, we were paying all of the invoices. It's 2,000 invoices that are more than 30 days old. Not just the SLA, but sort of legal requirements. You pay an invoice within 30 days. These were not being paid. Why? These here, you can see they didn't have a receipt. So so it couldn't be paid. These had the wrong receipt, right? So this, we call this the waterfall. This was me going back to the agency and saying, you know, this is a two-way dialogue. I can't pay this unless you fulfill your obligation. When you clicked on this line here, it opened up all 800 of those invoices that weren't being paid. And when you clicked on it, it said Jesse Sandberg owns this one, and this is what he has to do to fix it. So this was the governance dialogue back and forth. Let me just go to this one. Change is hard. This top line was a consultant said to me, change management activities focus on developing support for the change as the implementation progresses. Here's the way it goes. You're aware, you understand, you accept, and now you're committed. I went, guys, human nature, this is not the way a really complicated project works. This is sort of my Maslow hierarchy. At first, people were in denial. Then they were angry. You know, why are we going to do this thing? And then, oh my God, we're really going to do it. And then finally, sort of acceptance. We are going forward. And we're all going to have to work together. So this is just my way of saying background. There's a lot of things that are built into shared services, and we have to figure them out case by case. So with that, thank you. Hope this was useful. I'd like to sort of invite Leslie Field to come up and talk about sort of the government vision, and particularly about sort of the PMA and the cap goal.
Thank you all very much for having me here today. I am very pleased to be here to tell you a little bit about what we're doing in shared services, a little bit about the project management agenda, and then, of course, get your feedback. It's really valuable to us on kind of where we are, where the sticking points might be, and this initiative really brings together a lot of the core elements of the PMA that I think are really important. So it's the IT modernization, right, which is something that everybody's talking about here. It's the data accountability and transparency initiative, right? We've got a lot of data out there. We really need to make better use of it, especially making decisions using that data. And of course, building a 21st century workforce, right? So all of these kind of come together, and the shared services touches all of that, which I think is a really important framing as we move ahead. The overarching goal really is to move our workforce from doing sort of the low value work, right, to higher value and more impactful work. So I can get the technology to work. This is why I'm not in charge of IT modernization. There we go. So what we'd like to do in this space, we spend $27 billion on it annually. Added up all of these support services, right, about $27 billion. What we really like to do is focus on standardization and more common ways to get what we need. Just to give you a bit of a background on the scale and scope of the government procurement process, I'm sure many of you already know this, we spend about $500 billion a year in federal procurement, about 13 million transactions, right, about 160,000 vendors. That more than that, we're not really sure, 200,000 program managers and other folks involved in the process. So it's a really, really big system, right? There's a lot of duplication, there's a lot of stovepipes, there's lots of work going on that sometimes is not informed by other work. Shared services is a subset of that. It also includes some federal FTEs. You see, when you start to think about it, it's really confusing, which is why the anger, denial, despair thing is actually real, because there's just a lot going on out there, and coordinating, even in this day and age, and everybody is on their phones all the time, it's still really hard, right, to get the message out, to figure out what folks are doing, figure out a better way to do it. So there's a lot of change management that needs to happen, which is why we're really glad that Beth is here and that we've got a few of us stood up. And there's a lot behind the PMA and a lot of folks on it, all of that. But by creating sort of an innovative and competitive environment, what we'd like to see is the $2 billion savings over 10 years once those capabilities are in place. That's a lot of money, right? So that's really kind of the goal here, And while it might seem like a modest goal, I think they need to start there. And as we start to peel back the onion, as we get smart, as we learn our lessons, right, I think you can envision that the prize might be even a little bit greater. I'm the deputy administrator in the Office of Federal Procurement Policies, and in addition to this, I'm the shared services policy officer for shared services. But catalog management is also another really key initiative when we think about all the duplication of government out there, right? Really focusing on how do you use common solutions, centralized services, shared services, right, to be the most efficient government we can be. So we can focus on requiring tactics. The other piece to this is really reducing the burden on vendors. We have a lot of vendors here today. Right. So what we've heard about clearly, right? And shared services. So we do a lot of things inside that is pricing. Right? We're not standard. We don't always know exactly what we want. We don't always put the right requirements out there. So becoming smarter about how to do all of that is something that will yield a lot of benefits. Again, not in charge of IT modernization, so. Okay, that was great. So what we'd like to do through this process, right, by coordinating what we're doing, by sort of overseeing it at a government-wide level, is to reduce the burden on vendors so that we can, with one voice, right, we have standards, we have a common understanding, we have terms and conditions that make sense, right, that the government and the industry agree are the best practices in whatever it is that we're buying, right, and so having that kind of central coordination really for the first time is already yielding benefits, and I think you can see from the PMA kind of how we put all that together. That's how we are going to save money. That's how we're going to be more efficient in what we do, right? And so I think the PMA helps us with that. But this was all informed by the work that's already gone on before, right? Shared services isn't new. Strategic sourcing category management, again, not new, right? We've learned a lot of lessons in payroll before. We've saved, I believe, over $1 billion over 10 years, right? That's real money. That's real savings, right? And we've learned some lessons there that I think will help inform us as we move ahead. But as we learn some of those lessons, I think what we figured out is that doing large projects, big sort of monolithic moves to shared services, doesn't always work, right? And I think it's been very difficult. People are still on that continuum of denial and whatnot. So how can we do it differently? And what we realized is we needed to be more targeted. We really needed to focus on smaller bits of work that we could do, that we could learn those lessons, build the community, get the metrics right, and make sure that we were doing it in a way that made sense for the agencies, right? It needs to work for the agencies. It needs to work to support the mission. That doesn't work. We don't want to do shared services just for shared services. Right? So I think that's one of the big lessons that we learned last time. So it's also not something that you can do in the short term. Right, we can't just focus on one administration or a short-term kind of quick win situation. We really need the strategic vision, and that's why setting out the 10-year plan so that we can look across. Change takes a lot of time, and in a government that is this big and this complex, that kind of change takes a lot of time. So that long-term plan really needs to be robust. It needs to be something that we put the pin out there and we say we're gonna drive in this direction. If we need to make changes along the way, that's fine. We can make those changes along the way. But we really need to have something that transcends administrations and personalities and organizations and all of that. So I think that's another key component to why this, I think, is different. So just taking a look at kind of what the overview is here, the framework really was informed by the work that we did with the President's Management Council last year. I can't believe it's almost here. I know, I was looking at this, gosh, it seems like yesterday. But I think what's important is the PMC, right, is made up of the deputy secretaries and the chief management folks at the agency. But what I thought was really, really telling in the work that we did last summer was they said, gosh, we would really like to default to shared wherever we can, whether we're talking about common contracts, whether we're talking about centralized services or centralized solutions. To the maximum extent practicable, let's just say we have to opt out. We're not opting in, we're really opting out, right? So making sure that those kinds of administrative services were being handled in a way that made sense for them, that that was gonna be the default way they did business. And I thought that was probably the most important statement that they came up with in sort of overarching principles when it came to shared services. Helps us with category management too, So we're not reinventing the wheel. We're not putting out contracts all the time. We're not having vendors chase business all over the city when there should be a handful, perhaps, vehicles in certain spaces where that's where folks go, because those are the people who know the most about that work and the work ought to go there. So I think through those conversations, making sure that we don't think that one size fits all. I think that was an important lesson that we learned again over the summer. We also had the agency do a readiness assessment so that they could kind of evaluate themselves. How are they doing? Where do they fit in? Are they beginning? Are they sort of in the middle? That makes a difference to how they approach shared services and how we work with them. And so I think that, again, is something that we hadn't done before, and I think that's what makes us a little bit different. The operating model that we're using really has the three choices. So sharing contracts for technical and professional services, shared services that offer full services to agencies, you know, from soup to nuts, or a single service for those activities that are highly standardized and for which statutory and regulatory framework leave no room for variation. So there are legitimate reasons why an agency might need to do something different. And that's, we have to be mindful of that. We have to accommodate it. But we just have to make sure that we understand what that looks like, right? So that our solution set can accommodate those kinds of things. So I think there are probably a couple of things around the IT modernization, right? We need to make sure that our shared services folks, right, when they think about their systems, that they're investing in those systems. And I think that's been hard for the government generally. IT modernization is not something we can always plan for. It usually involves a pretty big spike in the budget. And a lot of folks said, oh, the B side, absolutely the B side, may not really appreciate that on the inside side. So, you know, they don't always appreciate the spike that it takes, right, to modernize their IT systems. And so there's a lot of ways around it. There's software assurance, there's other ways you can do it. But I think when you talk about a shared services environment and a provider, they've got to be able to modernize their IT. How do we pay for that? How do we do it? Right, and so I haven't solved everything quite yet, but I think that IT modernization component is incredibly important to this. Making sure that we're really transparent about performance. In contracting, we've got past performance metrics in there. We evaluate the performance of the contractor. We look at how they've done on other contracts before we award those contracts. So bringing that kind of rigor in the shared services environment is something I think is really important. Suzette Gap, who is a co-lead here, she's the new federal CIO. She talks a lot about mutual accountability, and I thought that was a really interesting element to all of this. So it's not just how well the shared service provider is doing, right? It's also how we as a customer, the agency as a customer is doing. If we've required them to standardize around 80% of whatever it is, whatever that service is, whatever you're buying, if they start to tweak it a little bit and modify it here and there, we're not getting that standardization that we're really looking for, right? And so I think we as a customer should be evaluated on how well we're doing being a customer of the shared service. So I think that's a little bit new, figuring out how to do all of that. But I do think the performance piece of this is really important. Back in the old days, I think folks felt that they were having a shared service sort of foisted upon them, regardless of how well that organization did. And so I think the first thing we've heard from a lot of the agencies we've talked to, how do I know that they're going to perform well? How do I know that this is the best cost? It doesn't have to be the lowest cost, but how is this the best value for me as a customer? And so that's our team's done a tremendous amount of work in figuring out how to do all of that. The transparency data, obviously, is something that we continue to work on in the government, but I think that's really where we're focused. Just to give an idea, I'm going to talk a little bit more about it. But I think one of the core principles for this is the accountability and the shared services governance model, I think, really does get at that. We want to make sure that the standards are correct, that they reduce vendor burden costs, and they introduce competition and innovation. Innovation is something people talk about a lot nowadays, right? Innovation is the hit word. A little hard to define sometimes, a little hard to measure and manage. But we really are looking for commercial providers to tell us, right, the market is better at this than the government is. What's new? What's new in that particular market that the government should avail themselves of? We really want that innovation to come into the government space. And so we need to be agile, we need to be nimble, we need to do business in a different way, right? So this is how I think this is going to help us get there. We also want to make sure that the differences in the implementation are real, right? If we get to 80%, I'd be really happy to have talks all about that. 80%, that would be great. That already mentioned strategic sourcing, we're always happy with 80%. It's okay for those 20% that differential, the 20%, that's okay. Agencies have different missions, they've got different statutory requirements, they've got different regulatory frameworks. They need to be mindful that doesn't mean that they can't participate, just may mean that they participate in a slightly different way. With that, I'm happy to take any questions. I know that Beth is going to talk a little bit more about the governance, and then we're going to talk about the panel. I will say I feel like things are much different in this environment. We've been working on shared services. We've been working on category management for a long time. I really feel that agencies are beginning to sort of let go a little bit of that, gosh, I have to do everything at home. And they're beginning to say, well, gosh, we've built a community around these shared services, the common solutions. We're starting to trust each other. We're starting to understand what that performance framework might look like. We're starting to understand that IT modernization is a really key component of this. So I feel like the ground is shifting. And I know we've got the PMA behind us. We've got Beth and her team focused on implementation. And we look forward to your feedback.
Last time we had a survey that we handed out to the audience. We wanted to make some comments.
Evolve back to those seven systems
Is that a monster?
I'm sure it will be. I don't know if you want to do that because you made the investment to move from those systems and those people to a different model that takes advantage of those that leverage it, right? Just to go to the scale. I don't imagine what you want to do.
Okay, we'll hopefully be able to get to that a little bit when I go to the slide. Hi, I'm Paul McNeil, looking at the PMA, is win-wins. I'm looking at shared services. Are we looking at more at a government level, federal level for shared services? Or also, are we kind of like win-wins of internal shared services? What level of service.
Right, so that's a great question. Beth can talk a little bit about that, but I know, like in commerce, for example, they created, they've done a really good job within the agency of creating shared services, right? Just as we would often say with government, if you can do some great work at home, that's fantastic. You can get your own house in order as a first step, or maybe that's the last step for them, because it depends on how well their performance and their cost is going. But we support that, right? That's a win, right, for the agency. Obviously, we need enough critical mass to move to a government-wide kind of solution. So, you know, I think we need to have agencies that will move to the government-wide solution. But we do support the folks at the agencies doing similar kinds of work if that makes the most sense for them.
Last question.
Hi, Carl Schneider from Army. Could you help me understand the relationship between shared services and category management?
Sure. So shared services, right, can be provided by a group of federal folks, right, supported by a contract. What we do in category management is say we really need 100 contracts with ABC vendor for the same kinds of things. And so what we would expect in that environment is that we rationalize those contracts. So I'm going to guess that you've got different labor rates, different performance requirements, different terms and conditions, which I'm assuming drives vendors crazy. Certainly, you know, when we start to peel back the onion and all that, it's really mind-boggling how much of a duplication there is. Sometimes that works for both sides, but generally we want to move in a direction where we have full visibility into those contracts, terms and conditions, the pricing, the labor categories, all of that. Right, so the underpinning contracts would need to be rationalized in a category management kind of way, if that helps.
Okay, well, I told Leslie we have her out in a half hour.
Thank you.
One thing about the PMA, so if you haven't taken the journey through the PMA and the cap calls, you really should, because incredibly so, there are many links between shared services, the workforce, IT. All the things that come to mind are already sort of linked in this vision. So it's a really comprehensive, dynamic vision. So thank you, Leslie. So the next.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't get the slides.
Can you get the slides? This is a public document. So if you go to performance.gov, I won't be too good. Okay. But all of this information is available and, you know, hopefully we'll look at it. So Leslie is the shared service policy officer. I call Beth Engerman the shared service procedure officer. So that's not really her title, but it's the other side. One is sort of ideas, one is trying to figure out how you put them into action. So Beth, please come up. So she's at GSA. She was formerly executive director of USSM, which was the shared service organization in the government. And now it is merged with the executive council, and Beth is leading that up.
Thank you, everybody. Good morning. Thank you all for coming out. We all love to talk about shared services. I have to agree with Leslie that I do think that the tone and the tenor is starting to shift. And a lot of that is coming from the messaging that we're hearing at the top. I personally have been involved in the shared service conversation for many, many years now. And I've had the benefit of years of feedback. I always joke, a former boss of mine used to say feedback is a gift, and I responded to him every day. Because it's true.
And so what we've been building here over the course of the last few years is a lot of the feedback, similar to what Bill, you said, and what we're hearing from all of you today, about what has worked, what hasn't worked. And when we think about building a new strategy for shared services, which we have a great opportunity to do under this president's management agenda, how do we make sure that we're being responsive to everything that we've heard? The last thing we want to do is roll out a model that makes it sound like we weren't listening, right? And so what I want to really frame my points on today is, what have we heard, and how does this model hopefully help respond to some of the concerns that we've been listening to, and then also kind of create the opportunity to get feedback on where we may have missed something. So I want to, there's kind of four big themes for me. Obviously, the first one is around governance and the voice of the customer, and how does that work in our new model. The second one is around the idea that one size really doesn't fit all in government, and that agencies, based on a lot of different things, based on where they are in their legacy IT, based on where they are in their cultural readiness for shared services, based on where they are in how standard their functions are, and many other things, might not be ready to buy both systems and services from someone else. So how do we create a marketplace where, as agencies start to mature in their readiness for sharing, that they actually have options? The third one is around competition. We hear all the time, that's an old solution that you picked, that you're making us all go to, right? Or how do we have choice in a world where the benefit of shared services is really that we don't have that much choice, because that's how you get scale and standards for the government? So how do you balance this feedback that we need choice against the true principle of sharing, which is that we want to consolidate to get scale, right? So we have that interesting dynamic as well. And then the last one, as Leslie pointed, is budget. More of the, where's the access to the capital so that we can keep these solutions modern and innovative? And how does this model really address that? So I'll start with governance, because it's conveniently already on board. And I think to Bill's point, we are working on what the accountability model is going to be for governance. But there's two different layers of governance. There's the macro governance, which Leslie talks a lot about. Who's setting the strategy for this? Who's advising the people setting the strategy for this? Who is making sure that we're on track and resolving some of the kind of the bigger issues that agencies are really experiencing when it comes to things like funding these transformations, like helping agencies really think through what it means to change their culture? Right, and setting that expectation at the highest levels of agencies so that the staff really understands what the leadership is expecting in this transformational effort, right? So this is the macro level governance. One of the reasons that we actually merged my former USSM team into the executive councils was because what we realized is the executive councils were the biggest stakeholders in this space, right? They're the ones that really are driving the change for their mission support functions. And so it made the most sense to bring that together, the councils, with USSM, so that we were talking to the right people on a regular cadence, so that we were making sure we acknowledged that they were the customers, right? And that their customers are our customers, right? The program managers who use services from the CFO and the CAO and the CIO are all the customers in this space that really need a voice going forward. And so we made a decision at GSA to make that organizational change because of the recognition of how closely we got the stakeholder and the customer voice needed to be with people on my team who are really thinking through the strategy going forward. Hence why you see the Shared Solutions Governance Board, which we stood up 2 years ago now, which is made up of two representatives from each of these councils that speaks to what the council priorities are, what the changes are that are happening in their different spaces, that we can then we absorb and think through as we're thinking through the strategy going forward. And that'll be all. Thank you all for coming. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So those councils really do inform the PMC, the President's Initiative. I have to echo Leslie's point. You know, they always say you don't know if initiatives are going to survive the transition from one administration to the other, right? And I took a job at the end of an old administration to stand up a brand new PMO for something. It was a 50-50 shot if it was going to stick a year later, right?
I believe in it because I really do think this is good government. I think there's a lot of opportunities to make it better and stronger. But it did stick, right, fortunately for me. But in, what we've done is we actually have now the summer of 2017 where we worked with the PMC and they actually set some very clear guiding principles. Leslie talked about one, which said we're going to, it's just by default we're opting in, right? It's not an opt out, but then we justify when we're opting in. So I think that was key. The other one that I thought was really important was they said the government does not need to own or maintain its own technology. Also a really, really important message to send, and how we also make the nexus to the IT modernization. Which when we talk about using things like software as a service, we're moving to a model where industry is actually providing for the solutions, and we are the managers of those solutions, where we don't worry about things like when we're gonna do our next upgrade, right? Customers don't have to plan for the next spike to be able to pay for it, right? We move to a more of a model where we're depending on industry really doing that work. The Business Standards Council. So one of the things that I always say is, we all think sharing is good, but we haven't yet agreed on what we're actually sharing, right? Which is the irony, because then what happens is one agency shows up and says, I want these things. Another agency shows up and says, I want these things. And what does the poor shared service provider do, right? Because there is no kind of set standards for what it, these what define these functions. And we haven't had a process where agencies actually agree to what those capabilities are and if they want. We have designated, and this is not a new thing, it was actually set up under the EGOV Act, kind of dusted that off and breathed some new life into it. We have designated, we call them the standards leads, formerly like the managing partners for each line of business, which is really responsible for defining the standards for the function. So you have them here. Treasury, I have to give a shout out to, not just because they grew up there, but because they've really done an excellent job at leading the charge and working with us on creating the Federal Integrated Business Framework, which is the way that we're documenting standards. It includes a standard set of services. It includes a standard set of capabilities that we buy. And then it includes data standards as well and use cases, which talks about how we actually would actually implement some of those capabilities. And so we have all of these organizations that are charged with creating these standards for their specific lines of business. But the one thing that we never did in the past, which we're doing now, we actually have them sitting on a council. They're coming together and talking about how the standards in one area, and you'll hear from one of my colleagues later who's working on this in the grant space, actually, how do those standards impact other lines of business, right? At the end of the day, we all know this is a process, right? And so what we need to do is talk more about how we're creating standards and how those standards align across different functional areas. And so the council is meant to do that. These people aren't building their standards in a silo. I cannot emphasize enough that if you walk away with one message today, it should be this. Find out who in your agency is representing your agency's needs on these boards. Because this is your chance, folks, to make sure that the capabilities that your organization needs are reflected in these standards. Because this is what we're going to buy. Right? These capabilities that these groups are coming up with for finance systems, for contract writing systems, for grant systems, for HR systems, this is it. And they all have boards that they're working with. But what I always hear is, I don't know who sits on the MACE. Does anybody even know what the MACE is? A couple people do. Yeah. That's the board in the HR space run by Dave Vargas. And the HRLB AOPM, PMO, that's coming up with the standards for HR, right? So find out who your folks are, and we're happy to share some more information about that. But we're only going to have a short window, because we know we have to get the standards done to enable this vision. So I encourage everyone to make sure that you are connecting with your folks and your agencies to do that.
Can you just walk through, it's clear GSA, Treasury, OPM are leads for those service areas. Who are the leads for the other ones that don't have any approval?
So some we're still working on. And the event we're still working on at OMB, who's really taken the lead and stepped up. You'll hear from Leah later, who's done that in the grant space. Right now, DHS is actually helping us with the acquisition leads and the acquisition standards in partnership with OSPP. And we're working on some of the GSA, like the travel, right? GSA is doing it for travel and also for fleet. So where these, then it's really been interesting because the more and more that we've done, Leslie talked about the figuring out what was standard. We did the data call in the summer where we said, what are the most standard functions? Well, that's helping us figure out where we actually need service, the standards leads to build the standards for those functions. And so I would expect that the list of these standards leads will continue to grow as we identify more and more functions that are eligible to be assisted.
So I know that right now the focus on the standards is more of the software and the technology side. Are those standards going to just go down into more of the process and the people part?
Yeah. There's a deliberate reason we haven't done that yet. Here's what I don't want. I do not want the government to build a process that looks like the way we do it today. Right? Because the way that we do it today is not necessarily the best way to do it in the future. And what we're hoping, a bit of a hypothesis at this point. We're hoping that if we bring new technology, the technology, if it's truly innovative, and it's truly some of the same technology that industry is using, maybe it'll have a better process. And then we should back into the roles and responsibilities and who's doing what based on that new technology, right? So we're deliberately starting with that. It also really does align nicely to the messaging on IT modernization. There are many, many systems out there in the mission support space that really do need to kind of move into the next generation. But yes, that will definitely, it's the service areas are actually part of the federal integrated business framework. What we're spending a lot of time right now on the capabilities, because that's going to be the document that we use to figure out what we buy in the technology space. So again, we want to take a look, find out where you are in this blue box, right? These federal agencies are all working with these organizations to these standards. Really important that your needs are represented and that the person representing your agency is talking to all of you. Okay. So let me go back to my thing up to Bill's point. So what happens if you're not happy? Right? That's what he does. In a world where you're not quite getting the service that you're expecting. I think there's two different, maybe for the two scenarios there. One is you're not happy, but everybody else is, right? Is it because you don't, your needs aren't as important, right? Because you're a small agency, perhaps, and you fall at the low end of the total pole when it comes to the things. Are they meeting the terms of the service level agreement, but in fact, you're still not happy, and you just can't quite articulate why, but the service level agreement terms are being met, right? And that's very much a real scenario that we've seen as well. This is the macro level way that we can escalate some of the concerns. Right? If it really gets to the point where it needs to come to the Shared Service Governance Board because we have a provider who's not performing the way that Leslie talked about, right? There is an escalation mechanism now that is formal that your agency can work through to get all the way to the PMC if needed to resolve it. It would definitely be, I think, worst possible scenario that someone would have to go back in time to some legacy solution that potentially would make their situation move. So we want to do everything we possibly can to fix the problem, because the assumption is if there's a problem for you, there's probably a problem for others as well, which means it really does need to have an escalation path. All right, so here's the meat of it, the vision that we've been talking about and building over the last few years. And the idea here is really one size doesn't fit all. As I talked about, an agency might need to buy a system, right, at a very old system. It needs to be replaced. I don't have the money to do it myself, and I don't really want to spend the next 3 years figuring this out all by myself. Or an agency might need, believe it or not, workforce. Several agencies have come to us recently and said, I'm really interested in this shifting resources from low value to high value work. I want to put more people on data analytics, right? I have a retiring workforce that I'm really thinking strategically about how I want to make those replacements, right? How can you help me do some of that lower value work? Maybe I just need people, right? And so there's a world where you can come and just get those services that Renee mentioned. Or there are agencies, and I don't make these up, these are real agencies who are coming to us with real scenarios about what they need, and they say, you know what, I'm out. I don't want my own system, and I need some people helping me. So I need a fully managed service that you just deliver the outcomes and you worry about everything, right? And so what we've built here is a model where an agency can actually buy one of three different kinds of support options, right? And the expectation here is that whomever that we actually designate to offer these solutions will have a model that supports those three delivery types. So a couple of things. First of all, no one should ever let me name anything ever. okay? Because we've got now the Task Order Review Board that we call it TORB, that was also stood up under the old USSM, right? So terrible acronym. Also where I named my child Joey, I figured that would fit. But so I think what I want to talk about here first is actually the big box in the middle, which is the service management office. So one of the things that we've also recognized is having government compete with government for services might not actually make the most sense. We want competition in this space, right? But government doesn't have access to as much capital as we really know we need to have a really mature marketplace. However, we really do still have a role for government. There is this old scenario where everybody remember travel? Everyone's saying this now, so I feel safe to say it. I remember travel where we all said, there's one contract and there's two systems and everyone go there. Remember that? Do you know what we ended up with? 47 instances of the travel system. Right? So the argument there is a role for government in this space. And it is also, I think, a really interesting answer to the question of the difference between category management and shared services and how they really do work together. It's important that we're buying smart and we have that one contract, right? That we know represents the needs of the government because we've done our work on the standards, okay? But the role of government or the role of the service management office really is to help to help agencies rethink their business processes so that they can implement that one instance, right? So that we can get to the 80%. So we can help and that we can really rethink almost how the culture is at the agencies so that they actually are in a space where they can adopt this common solution that we have. So we're shifting the competition from in the government competing with other government agencies to offer services to where it should be, which is that we have actual industry solutions in this space, but that you still work with a federal agency to get to those solutions because we need the federal agencies to partner together to really drive to the standards. Because there is no benefit and it's not shared services if everybody's just going out and buying whatever they want and building whatever they want. And I think that's where I talk about the difference. I know we want choice and I know we want competition. So what we're trying to build here is a limited choice, limited competition marketplace so we can still get the outcomes and the scale we want for the taxpayer, but have enough choice and enough flexibility for agencies recognize to Leslie's point that there are differences in need. So the service management office does all of those inherently governmental things, right? ATOs the systems. Wouldn't it be nice if someone else did that for everyone, right? Works on all of the documentation, right, that's required for the system. Is the subject matter expertise that really works closely with the vendors on the day-to-day engagement, right? And what kinds of changes are being made. If we're working in a world where we're getting constant updates from these systems, right? Constant. You don't even know it as a customer. Someone needs to know it. And it would be the role of the service management office to accept all of those updates and test them on the behalf of the customers, right? So these are things that you have to do. And it would be nice if these functions were also centralized through a spell. But what you'll see here is they're really not owning their own IT. They're not managing their own instance of a thing, right? We see that all the time where we say like, no, don't worry, I'm already in the cloud. I'm good. And I want to say, you need to realize you can move old stuff to the cloud and it's still old stuff, right? So what we're trying to do is move not only the infrastructure to the cloud, but also the platform and also the software layer. And I think that this space of mission support is common enough that we can go that far. Right? Just being in the cloud doesn't necessarily make you in a software as a service model. So one thing you see all the roles of the service management office here, right? And it really is a federal storefront to a variety of choice, a limited variety of choice. Down here, so think of this as the category management layer, right? Which is why this all comes together so nicely. We set up contracts for systems, one. Think about it. One, imagine a BPA, right? For a couple of choices for systems that meet the needs of the capabilities documentation that we've done here, right? The government-wide capabilities that we've documented, all of you have had a say. We go out and we use that to actually establish these technologies. Great. Everyone comes through the service management office. You choose based on your needs and whatever makes you unique, right? You choose which technology solution is the right one for you. However, what we're looking for are solutions that have configuration, that have choice within an instance to be able to actually maybe customize the workflow. But we're not actually adding code to those choices. We're not creating new instances for people. We want as much configuration as possible and as little customization as possible. Customization is what becomes expensive to maintain. Then we have implementation and integration contracts, right? How do you get there? I always think of this as how do you get there? We all know you need people to help you change your business processes, change your data, really implement these systems. And these would be contracts that agencies could use as opposed to going out and having to do it yourself in partnership with the service management office. And then over here, I think of these as your O&M contracts, right? Help desk support, transaction processing support, some of that lower value work that we talk about. Which is repeatable and can be done in a way that we can leverage and get scale.
Could you tell us a little bit more about how the service management office would interact with the agency level in this doing implementation? Are some of these functions that you build for replicated? Is this sphere or is this food value add and all this kind of thing?
So my answer says it's probably a journey. Right? Oh, yeah. John asked, how does this service management office interact with the actual customers and the agencies? And would there be redundancy in terms of what the service management office is doing for the SMO? You see why I shouldn't be able to name things. or the SMO, and how does that actually work in relation to agencies? And would they have similar functions with the agencies? And I think my honest answer is I think it'll take us a while. I think there will be some overlap as agencies are thinking about how this will impact their workforce and how we'll actually kind of consolidate even just these functions in the SMO. But at the end of the day, these functions, the kind of the vision, the 10-year vision, was that the SMO would perform all of these functions, that the agencies then would have access to this workforce that used to maybe do these things, they can now be thinking about doing different things, right? And that's the tie to the workforce PMA goal. Which is how are we thinking about retraining and repurposing some of the stuff. So I don't want to skip this layer. This is a really important layer, which is the federal agency users. Obviously, there would be an everyday interaction and a customer advisory board for every single service management office that would really be talking about that delivery, right? Whether or not the expectations were being met, whether or not the service was right, are the vendors performing the way that they should? And that would be a constant engagement with the daily user of the service. This is a TORB. This is a new thing. The TORB is, let's go back to the travel scenario. If a TORB had been in place, a task order review board, every time an agency went in to actually try to implement that travel system, and they came with their special requirements, somebody would have been able to say no. If we were actually reviewing the task order review board, and if there were a clear policy owner in place for travel that said, you know what, here's the policy, you don't really need that, you're customizing it because of a way that you used to do it in your agency, and instead, this is what we offer, these are the standard choices, pick one of these and change the process. Now there is this scenario, a very legitimate, the 20%, where someone might come and say, actually we do have a reg, and we're in a statutory requirement because we have to do it this way. You know what, that's legit. But does that mean they get to brand to have their own instance and their own travel system? No, what happens is now you just build that thing that makes you special as a microservice or as an extension to that. So to Leslie's point, you're still sharing the 80%, right? You're sharing what is common. But instead now we realize, you know what? Maybe you're going to need money to be able to maintain that extension, because that's a special requirement that you have. But that's going to be cheaper and less maintenance than trying to maintain the entire thing. Yes?
To what extent does the...
Use the mic.
Sure. Good morning, Beth. Thank you, Mark, TSA. To what extent does the customer involve in the SMO? Like, are there community of interest, community of practice? Like, what, other than do the transaction of the task order on a contract, to what extent does the customer involve in that process?
So it's this. I mean, this is very vague on this because we're trying to figure out. We're trying to really give whomever we designate as to be as those, a little bit of freedom to figure out how they want to engage with their customers. We don't want to be so prescriptive that it really paralyzes the SOs from coming up with a model that will work for them and their customers. But this is that for an everyday customer advisory board that works through some of those daily challenges with the actual provider.
If an agency comes in and says, it's not driven by law or regulation, but it's driven by mission, is there a benefit cost analysis there if they can make a mission case for doing something different, even if it's not driven by law?
Yes, and I think it's actually also to your earlier point. That's the whole point of the task board review board. And so we're still working through exactly how that board, the documentation that you would need to bring to that board to be able to make the case, right, for if it really is better for your mission to do X than to do Y. I think as Leslie said, we're going to make sure that we have the processes in place so that agencies can bring and defend whatever it is the position that they're taking. Okay. So the last thing I want to make sure I mention. Yes.
One question.
Yeah.
One more, how much time is this going to take? The whole idea is to get goods and services to people faster. How much time is it going to take to do this process? And number two, I assume where you're talking about the federal agency users, that's where I come in and say, you know, my secretary needs to produce this product. What are you going to do to help me make this product better, faster, as possible? Because it is a service, so it's supposed to be helping me, not be supporting. I've got a product here. I'm going to use it.
Yep. And I think that's the question of how does the... Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. So if my secretary needs something and he needs something now, how do I make sure that I'm getting that?
Well,
right?
No, he has a product. He has to produce. How do you help him?
Yeah. And I think that's great, right? I think it's been working closely with the service management office to make sure that we're actually getting that. I think the question goes back to how do you prioritize, right? And that's part of what we're working through an accountability structure to figure out how do we prioritize requests. Right. I mean, honestly, small agencies have said forever, I can't ever compete with, you know, these large cabinet level agencies. They're always going to make it ahead of me in the queue. It's a struggle, right? And so part of that this is not a fully baked, right, procedure yet. We actually have a lot to do underneath it, especially with the TORB. But as I said, we really want to work with the service management offices to build the right processes to address that kind of a problem.
Is the time limit part?
Oh yeah, time limit. Oh, 10 years plus. No, the truth is, this is a 10-year plan, right? No one has any expectation that all of a sudden everybody just like next year this time we're going to be going to this and everybody's going to be happy, right? That is not our expectation. This takes a lot of time. Well, any company that has tried to implement shared services and ask for how long it's taken them, and then on a magnitude of the federal government with all of our complexities and all of our differences, this is going to take a while. I think the thing that's been missing though is a framework that we could actually start managing to for the next 10 years. It doesn't change because it makes sense. And that's the intent of this PMA, is to really lay out the framework. We're on a listening tour right now, get as much feedback. I will say this. You know, like, until we're comfortable that it represents the need. We've been working on doing this for 2 years. It's actually not codified in a vision, but after starting. So money. At the end of the day, everyone always says, okay, great, Beth, how are you going to pay this? How are you going to help me pay? How's my agency getting money? Part of this is about, again, understanding the level of money, what it is you're actually doing. Service, where they're going to go, When's the end of the useful life of your current employer? A lot of information that we are currently trying to figure out, this came from there. And so that's going to help us also then make the right budget decisions to help agencies have. Here's what I'll say. There is one company that will remain unknown that stated in its end of year report last year that they invested $600 million in research and development in 1 year in their payroll system. How much did the government invest in research and development in our payroll systems last year?
Zero.
I'm going to go with not $600 million. Right? So I think we all have to talk about how we're going to like make money appear. You know where the money is? The money's in industry. They're investing in capital, but we have to send the right signals, right? They have the capital to invest, but to send the signals that we're actually going to move to this model so that we move the government to more of an O&M state, where we're just paying for all of these things that are baked into someone else making it. But every 5 years, when someone says, we don't support that version of this system anymore, we don't all have to freak out and go ask for money. Right, is the expectation that someone else worries about that, and they are also worrying about that in their pricing to government so that it's much more standard and predictable. And so that's part of the pivot to trying to leverage and have solutions in the IT current space.
Yeah. So on a kind of a related question, but how do you, when you have the vendors set up like that, one of the things that industry does, they look for disruptors, they look for things that can come in. If you have three or four vendors and they have a 10 or 15 year contract, You deprive yourself of like an Airbnb or an Uber or some kind of industry disruptor. How do you allow for disruption in terms of those contracts?
Yeah, we're thinking about that as part of the acquisition strategy in terms of making sure we have opportunities to refresh, right? But again, at the end of the day, I'm really looking for industry as well. There's a role here that industry needs to think differently too, right? I think that's the message that I'm also trying to send as well. Government is going to have to absorb this new role. My challenge to industry is, why don't you guys stop building things? There's lots that's already out there. Partner together to bring the expertise to make some of these solutions also work for the federal government, right? I mean, I think that's what we're trying to say is nobody wants to pay industry to build anything new either. There is not one of these lines of business that we know there is not commercial technology already available for. And so it would be hard pressed to say for somebody to show up and say, we're going to go into a new payroll system, right? So this is where I'm challenging, bring the right partnerships to the table so that we have those kinds of opportunities to insert new innovation as things evolve in the market.
At that point, how much of the 80% standard for government conform to commercial standards?
That's a great question. Part of the reason that we're doing our standards in the format of outcomes and capabilities is because we're trying to leave open the space to bring new solutions, right? So when you look at these standards, everything is written for the most part starting with a verb, right? We want something, some capability. It's not a prescriptive, this is the way we do it today. So build us something that is the way government's always done it, which we can guarantee is probably not already available. So we are doing everything that we've heard over the last few years, the outcome focus, right? Everyone says that. Care about the outcome, not about the process. So we are taking all of that advice, and it's all baked into here. And this gives the space to industry, but recognize that there are things that make the federal government unique, and there's subject matter expertise actually meet those capabilities and the needs of the federal government.
Another good question. So in the international development world, there's this idea of a development bank, sort of a public-private partnership. Would it be useful to you and to the rest of the government to have access to some sort of bank, like a development bank?
They're going to give us money.
Well, that would be the idea, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Obviously, it's always helpful for us to have access to people and ideas and things, how we can do things differently to have a discussion.
How will the SMO be funded?
So that's a great question. Part of the, we have an entire list and we're working on it of what the criteria is for a service management office. And part of that really is this access to some sort of a revolving fund, right? Franchise fund, something that allows them to retain some piece over the years to help pay for things that we can't predict today. Let's just say that, right? One of the challenges that we all know is franchise funds haven't necessarily always been implemented in a consistent way across government. Some agencies have retained, you know, some of those funds differently and for different things than others. So part of what we're doing is building out a list of criteria that would have to happen to be able to enable the SMOs. But the truth is, if the SMOs aren't really owning their own technology, right, which is really the big thing we needed to reserve money for, what we actually need to think about is not so much the replacement of the IT in this new space, more how do we get to the new IT? There's still going to be a cost, right, to transition. Every time you move from one system to the other, I prefer this bump, though, instead of this bump, right?
Right, even if it's like governance and kind of management piece, subject matter experts, et cetera, I mean, there's still going to be some need for funding. Is there any vision for how the MGT Act and the funds associated with that might play into the funding for the SMO? Or might there be a connection there?
Yeah, there's all, I mean, I think that right now the whole MGT Act, all of that is on the table, and they're really looking at proposals. One thing that we're really involved in is any proposal that comes in that sounds like somebody wants to do something in their own space here, right? Because we want to make sure that we're all aligning to this vision. That whole act is open to proposals right now for anything that we think would help us move in this direction.
Okay. So the next half hour, 40 minutes, is about when you're sitting here telling that same story as an agency, what is that story you're telling? What is that dialogue? So we do have a panel, and I call them up. Tom Muir is a principal executive officer at the Enterprise Support Services at the VA and has experience already with the service center and service contract, SLA, et cetera. So he can tell you about how that journey has gone. Rhea Hubbard is a senior policy analyst at OMB and, as Beth alluded to in her comments, working on how does grants fit into this model? Is grants an HR process or a finance process? What are its unique characteristics? And Jeff Cook, formerly an OMB in the Bush administration, now at DOL and working on shared services as well. So each of them sort of is at a different point in this journey. So first I'll just give them a couple of minutes just to tell you where their function is at and where they're at. So Lee, you want to start?
So as Beth stated in her comments and Jesse just alluded to, is that I'm currently I'm currently holding the service area lead role for grants, although we would like to find a permanent service area lead. And I'm in the Office of Financial Management, where I manage grants policy. I work a lot with federal working agencies and the recipient community. So I, like Beth, receive feedback on a daily basis and receive feedback on a daily basis. So really my role is to really make sure that agencies feel like they have a place at the table as we're doing all this standard development that Beth spoke about. I serve on the Business Standards Council, and we're currently, I think if you go to the USSM site, we've already done a lot of capabilities in the grant space. So if you are not engaged and you are a major grant making agency, which most agencies are, there's actually very few agencies that do not give out grants. Make sure that you know who your representative is. I can certainly connect with the right folks to make sure your voice is heard at the table as well. But we are well on our way, and there's actually a related cross-agency priority goal called Results-Oriented Accountability for Grants, which really sets the foundational framework for any future shared services and the definition of sharing quality services capital as well. So there's a lot of ongoing work in this space, and again, if you're interested in learning more, feel free to reach out to me after this.
Thanks, Rhea. Jesse said it earlier, where are you in your journey? And VA's journey to shared services is sort of an up and down version of probably what most of all agencies have gone through. It's easy with a secretary that used to be the former CEO Procter & Gamble to understand the value of global business services, driving multifunctional shared services. You have a doctor for a secretary, it's a little easier to focus on functional improvements and changing HR modernization, for example. And the challenge, of course, in VA is a scale issue predominantly. And I was talking earlier about just kind of a discussion on scale. We're working on fixing our hiring issues in the department, and we're short 36,000 employees today. That's more employees than most federal agencies have. In their workforce, we're short 36,000. So you need a job, VA is hiring. So the scale of the department is kind of daunting. We stood up a centralized shared service office, the director of shared services, in terms of enabling our customers via our lines of business to focus on their requirements. And now we're shifting more towards a functional improvement for our financial management system replacement, the 1983. System. Our HR systems replacement, the 1966 Unix-based system for those largest non-DOD agencies. And IT modernization, as you would suspect, we spend a lot of our budget on legacy systems. So we've got a lot of work and effort right now in functional discussions on how we improve our services to VA employees that enable, once again, employees then to deliver an outcome to our customer. Easy to keep focus on veterans and families, but yet in our journey to shared services, we thought we'd go straight to a global business service, and we got that not so fast. You got to go back and define what you want to achieve as an outcome for your customers. So we're kind of back to negotiating where we move forward in our journey.
Thanks, Tom. I'm Jeff Cook. I'm from the Office of Administration in the Department of Labor. We are currently implementing shared services within the Department of Labor for HR, IT, and procurement activities. This was this originated in the agency transformation plan. Once that was approved by OMB, I was brought in specifically because of my past experience in shared services. I had worked in the Department of Labor's Office of Administration during the Bush administration and stood up benefits.gov, the shared service for benefit screening. That brought me the attention of OMB, who said, if you like one shared service, maybe you'd like to run a dozen of them. And they brought me in to run the entire portfolio for the administrative services, shared services. So I was hand in hand with VA during your payroll migration, as well as 23 other agencies that we migrated. And hats off to OPM and the service providers there who did an exemplary job in migrating all those large agencies. Had travel management, which as Beth noted, had some disparity in different requirements. And integrated acquisition environment, procurement systems, and a number of other systems. I'm now back in an agency role and looking from the customer perspective, but fully aware of what it takes to be a provider and to be have the oversight role as well. So I look forward to it. Thank you.
So let's just talk for a minute about the voice of the customer. So let's start with three of us go around. You've heard sort of Leslie and Beth talk about sort of the big idea, what's going to happen. So from your point of view on the ground, are you already engaged in that conversation with USSM and then the organization? Are you in all of those different organizations Beth alluded to, the SMO, et cetera? Is that where you find yourself? Jeff, have you started down that road?
And yes, we're participating in all the government-wide work and working with USSM. Our immediate focus right now within the agency is just doing an inside the agency migration to the Office of Administration, providing those administrative services. Like many agencies, the Office of Administration provides HR procurement and IT for the small agencies. And I think almost every large agency has an office administration that services, OSEC, your policy office, and a couple of small component offices, and your large offices frequently have their own capabilities. And so we are now at the point of migrating those large components into a centralized service within the department. I will say when I was at OMB, I would look at agencies who would cite this as a shared service implementation, and I sometimes roll my eyes a little bit because I think agencies and within an agency is much easier transformation than doing a cross-agency implementation. So, and that's sort of what we're finding as well. Within an agency, you don't have some of the difficulties, say, with different comp plans that you might have across different agencies.
Comp as a provider, help within FDA, and how is that managed?
What we found, it goes back to, and thanks to Beth and to the close look about getting back to kind of revenue discussion. What we did early on in our journey is we merged revenue with shared services. So we used the franchise fund, which I was director, to enable us to make good investments, $1.3 billion into innovation and shared services. So as part of that, we used it, for example, to stand up an HR enterprise center to deliver HR services across our agency. But yet, as Jeff said, we still struggle with large departments, or large bureaus, for us, large administrations. But lines of business, of course, have their own HR service lines, their own HR workforce. So we need to close to, I think, about 6,000 O201 in our agency. A very large, complex, decentralized, hospital-focused, and benefits and cemeteries, kind of large business lines. So bringing that together from a customer perspective is absolutely critical. So we did quarterly customer satisfaction surveys focused on metrics that matter. The dashboard formats, looking at performance over enterprise centers against customer expectations, brought that to our board of directors, briefed it to the enterprise center directors, and to the board of directors. The board of directors at the time was chaired by our deputy secretary, the chief operations officer of the agency. And then we have both providers and customers that sit on the board that define sort of that governance structure. We've now transitioned sort of a little bit away from that, going more towards a customer-focused board, led primarily by our chief acquisition officer and our chief financial officer. Had the board meeting actually this week to transition to the board discussion. So it's a little bit closer to the customer and more at the deputy secretary level. So we'll see if this board delivers kind of closer to the customer discussion.
So, Enria, if you go out and talk grants, which I have a little bit, everybody distributes a different kind of grant, the education grants, healthcare grants, et cetera, branded grants. And when you talk to them, they think everyone thinks what they do is entirely unique. Have you begun that conversation about, it's not about the money you give, it's about managing the grant process?
So, I mean, I think what we're looking at is what can be common, what we can share. I certainly hear that continually on a day-to-day basis. It's over 1,800 different grant programs, and there's all these different authorizing associated with them. However, with any grant, you have an application, you apply, you review the application, you award. There's some outcome-focused capabilities that we've really been focusing on, what is common. And I think we've made some great strides with the grant management community, getting folks to be able to talk about this, realizing that in many cases we have a lot more in common than we realize. Sometimes we're using different words. And we come to this realization, wait, we're talking about the same thing, we've just been using a different word. So there's been actually a lot of really great work that we started last year. And again, we have come up with a core set of outcome-focused capabilities available on the USSM site. And right now we're working on data serialization efforts. And I think to get to your point about program a bit more too, I think that one area that we do need to do a much better job across the grants management community is breaking down silos within the agencies, even between the program office, the grants management office, finance, et cetera, because sometimes the program office does always take that very unique programmatic perspective, as they should, because they're very focused on the outcomes and intent of those awards. But really, like I said, there is actually a lot in common, a lot more than we realize. You can still have those unique programmatic requirements, but use some shared solutions.
I want to just talk for a minute about leadership. So we have presidents change for 8 years, secretaries, now they seem to change about every 6 months, but normally every couple of years in any administration, deputy secretaries also change. So with that kind of, with changing leadership, I know Leslie and Beth talked about how this PMA looks like a roadmap that can cross over the different kind of changes. But in your experience, starting with you, Jeff, the change in administration, change in leadership, how do you keep the effort going?
So I think we focus on the continuity. Beth was just saying we're looking at a 10-year plan and building, establishing mechanisms that will last through the administration. When I was previously at OMB, I readily admitted that the programs that I was able to make the most progress on were the ones where I was building on the work that had come before me. So the Clinton National Performance Review established a number of agencies that had reimbursable authorities and were already cross-servicing some small cat and dog agencies for payroll. And it was only because the National Performance Review left that infrastructure in place that I was able to make so much progress on the payroll migrations. I never could have migrated 23 agencies' payroll systems if I had to invent all that stuff up front. Same thing with the integrated acquisition environment. The integrated acquisition environment started, you know, under Clinton administration. We transitioned from the pink sheets into commercebusinessdaily.gov or something like that, wasn't it, Dan? And then we transitioned that to FedBizOps and built upon that as a foundation to stand up the CCR and FedTeds and ORCA and the EPLS. So those shared services were built on a foundation that the National Performance Review had actually left in place. And likewise, I know Matt Lira was quoted as saying that this management is like a relay race and you're passing the baton. And that, I think, is where you make your most progress. The MACE board that we stood up, and this is the HR line of business interagency council, the MACE board. We established that when we stood up the HR line of business about 2 years into the Obama administration. Dustin Brown called me from OMB and said, "Hey, you're going to get a call from Bernie Kluger over at OPM to talk about HR line of business and the MACE board." And Bernie had come in with the new administration and said one day he was postulating that they needed an interagency council where they could vet policy and roll out changes. And somebody said, "Well, why don't you use the MACE board?" And sure enough, the MACE board was continuing to meet and to operate even after we had walked out. And I think that's indicative, number one, build on structures and mechanisms that already exist, repurpose what is there rather than having to build something from scratch. And number two, when you find something that has kept going on its own without a mandate from OMB, without prodding from a politically appointed administration, that's when you know you've gotten into the bloodstream of the government, that you have now established something that is now the way we do business. Nobody is talking about going back to individual agency registries of vendors. You know, we have the central contractor registry. I don't think anybody's ever going to unwind that and say, you know, I think we should stand up our own vendor registration system, because that would be silly. So take those things that pre-exist and use them as the levers to build on for the future. You know, in the old days of Rome, when the new emperor took over, he didn't knock down the building that the last guy built. He would just chisel his name on the front, and now it was Caesar's temple or whatever. You know, but he wouldn't knock down the old temple and build a new one. He just changed the name.
talked a little bit about all the change in leadership, but are you struggling to keep people focused on the kind of shared service work you started?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I'm going to kind of follow Jeff. I'm not sure who our secretary is. Nobody knows who the nominee is. Certainly hasn't been announced, by the way. So, you know, VA is certainly an agency in transition. You know, they have this press release to kind of talk to, we've got to get back to the mission. So kind of carrying through with Jeff. Stay true to your foundations. Your foundations are do what's right for the mission of your agency, for us that's better now. Do what's right for veterans and do what's right for taxpayers. You know, we've been on this journey now for two secretaries and an acting secretary. And now we have a lawsuit challenge on the authority of our acting secretary. We'll be on it for three secretaries or four secretaries or five secretaries. It's building on the foundations that we set. I think we've got a really strong community of interest. One of the best leadership and the team mates, camaraderie and risk in this coalition of the Lily. We sell it, so John Marshall will tell them. It's hard to move an agency, and it's really hard to move a large bureaucratic agency. If you focus on dealing with right for your mission outcomes and dealing with right for taxpayers, we'll survive the next 7 years.
And you, what about you and Grant? Are you starting down this grants journey anew, or has this been a long time conversation?
Well, it's certainly something we've heard for years that there's a need in the grants management space, particularly from the recipient community. Because when you think about it, most of these recipients actually receive awards from multiple federal working agencies. It's incredibly burdensome to them to interact with all these different systems, different standards. That's what our standards actually flow down to reporting requirements for the recipient. So it's certainly something that has been part of the long-term vision. There was a Council of Financial Assistance Reform that was established during the previous administration, and it was about a year into this administration, and we recently expanded it, but the CFOC has taken over that responsibility in general, and you'll see that in result-oriented accountability for grants capital that remains a focus. So something in the COFAR was, there was a focus on data standardization. There was the uniform guidance, which kind of established a government-wide policy for grants, which is something that I think we needed in place as a foundation to even go to a future solution or the centralization of services. So I think it's been a long time coming. It's just that we've been kind of putting in the building blocks, and now I think there's a lot more momentum. You know, we spoke earlier about the challenges. Agencies always say that they're unique with the program-specific requirements, but also something that I hear a lot from the community is that they're incredibly passionate, and they realize that it is a problem the way we manage grants. They hear from the recipients all the time that it's incredibly burdensome from them. I heard from one agency once, they talked to a tribe, and they actually interacted with over 200 different systems across the federal government, which you think about it, that's incredibly burdensome. So the tribe is very low capacity. So I think there's a lot of return to this opportunity here. It's been a long time coming, and folks are really excited about it. It's not easy, though. I'll say that. It's kind of more of a long-term vision, and I think trying to focus on areas that we can make some quick improvements and recognize it will be a long-term process. So
because this is, you know, we saw this more as a community event, so I would open it. So I'd like to sort of use the panel and use you all. If you've got thoughts, your agency, what, where you've been, what you've tried, how you've succeeded or failed, I'd like to hear from some of you, and the folks on the panel with their experience perhaps can have this dialogue about what succeeds and fails. So with that opening, any ideas or thoughts among you all?
Hi, Jessica Fondato from HHS, and this is probably more of a comment than a question, but I'd love to hear the panel's thoughts on, as we've talked throughout the morning, the value of shared services is definitely clear, and the challenge of everyone feeling like they're unique and struggling to adopt it is real. I think the biggest challenge I see as part of that is relinquishing the control. So it's as much I'm unique, I have special requirements as a given agency, right, organization, as it is, I'm giving up control of the ability to manage the service. And I don't know if the panel has any thoughts on, you know, taking, helping the organizations and agencies figure out how to take that leap of faith, right? Regardless of whether my system is working, I have control over it, and I'm relinquishing that if I go to a shared service.
So, when we're doing a transition plan, when I previously did the transition plan with OMB, implementing called systems at 26 agencies, develop a plan for each one, agencies were sometimes reticent to commit to specific milestones and for the reason you're citing, you know, things that are outside my control. So the bargain I would make with them is give me the conditions under which we will proceed, and I'll sign up. You will not be held accountable to moving forward or to making that milestone until those conditions exist. So if you want 99.9% accuracy on payroll, on a mock payroll before we transition your payroll, okay, fine, let's set that as a gating condition. And so agencies sometimes would be willing, you know, I mean, it's how we would condition migrations. The control issue, you know, we talked about prioritizing and prioritizing requests. We hear that a lot. Agencies, I think, sometimes readily admit that their service internally is not great, but at least I know whose throat to go choke. And so, you know, 2 points there. Number one, sometimes we are readily willing to mask or to compensate for poor planning or poor management by having this throttle that we can go turn up. And so we find ourselves a little bit like Lucy in the candy factory, you know, we're doing things to cover up, to make up for lost ground. And sometimes when I've been on the vendor side of this, sometimes you wanted to drive your customer to a little more discipline, you know, discipline on hiring requests. You can't dump everything at the end of the quarter. Anyone would fail under that condition, be they internal or external. And so saying that a shared service provider, sometimes agencies have a tolerance for internal problems more than a tolerance for external problems. So part of what we were talking about, you know, constraining the marketplace on the vendor side, constraining the marketplace a little bit on the consumer side too, on the agency side. Here are conditions that the agencies have to meet. I was on the private sector side. I was meeting an 80-day hiring model, but all too often when that missed, it was because something was awaiting approval on the customer side. And so to then go and have an advocate on the government side, you know, a vendor is like pushing on a rope. You know, you call a hiring manager and say, can you approve this? You know, we need somebody inside who's government, who is equally responsible for making sure that that the government side conditions are met.
Kind of two thoughts to kind of follow it. The system that U.S. Assembly set up with the M3 playbook, I think, is very helpful. Jeff kind of talked about it earlier. But shared services, the bottom line, is all about trust. And what we find is a lot of our facility directors, they like poor service better than they like that they own, then they like their trust you to deliver better service. But in reality, most of us are consumers of shared services, right? The only government business anyway. So just good example, all on HHS. The VA is the largest integrated healthcare network in the world, but we run none of our clinics for our employees inside of federal buildings. It's outsourced to HHS. So we have 91,000 nurses, but none of them serve our employees, because we outsource that because we figured it's better service. So we're customers of shared services, although we may not understand it and know it, like DFS was a payroll center. And so part of the trust that we're working on with a particular facility director, think about a mandate from Washington trying to drive hospital performance in Montana. And they're not gonna trust your HR service delivery so you can prove that you deliver better HR services for IT, HR, finance, contracting, the property, travel, grants. So you've got to, I think the gate process works very well. You use gates to kind of cross-check where you are in the process, and then have the wherewithal of your customer relationship management to say, you know what, if we're making a mistake, we'll go backwards. We'll go back to where we were and we'll start over. We're not going to drive you to a point where you're not functional as an organization. We'll stop the process of the back. In the private sector, when I had the chance to visit Procter & Gamble, they used to sit with business line there and say, you know what, I'll take your work at 70 cents on the dollar. We're going to invest an additional 30 cents. So it's automatically going to cost you less. If you don't deliver in 6 months, we'll give it back. It'll cost you less for your current service, and we'll give it back to you. That kind of trust doesn't come easy. That's that, you know, small office stands up properly. That's that customer relations management piece that's so critical to understanding your requirements. You've got to know your customers.
Well, I think it just simply comes down to a matter of governance and strengthening the governance structure. I think that's why agencies in the past have not wanted to relinquish control, perhaps, because maybe there wasn't a strong governance structure in place. They felt like their changes wouldn't be prioritized, et cetera. So that really boils down to my perspective.
Is the microphone
on?
Yes. Connie Doyle from Department of Commerce. Interested in thoughts around this pulling this thread on mutual accountability. So certainly when you think about on the vendor side, there's the service level agreements. And to what you described, if they're fulfilling them or not fulfilling them, there are those measures that can be shared around performance. But in creating trust, building that customer relationship, how can we then facilitate the development of customer level expectations that our customers will be receptive to agreeing to these terms and also embracing mutual accountability across the aisle?
That's a great question.
So I'm not, would Reagan say trust but verify?
Yeah.
Not big on trust. bigger on. I mean, you have to have a relationship. You know, there's a phone number to call. But I would prefer to put metrics around things that matter so that we can demonstrate that we either did or did not have a problem. This is maybe sometimes easier done on the private sector side, where you can set your account lead to be measured on revenue and business growth, and you set up your shared service organization to be measured on P&L. So they're trying to drive down costs, they're trying to drive up revenue. You single point those to one guy who can referee the fight between those, and you set up a tension within your company that's invisible to the customer. The customer does not see this tension, but inside the company, you've got the battle between quality and price, okay? And you do that sort of outside of the customer. Harder to do maybe in the federal government, except that actually at DOL, I'm looking at, can I set up my regional representatives as basically the account lead? And so their responsibility is for customer happiness, and then the shared service center is responsible for operating in a more business-like manner, driving, getting efficiencies. Number two, as Tom said, when you show them better service, they become much more willing to come. Our CIO has done exemplary work within the department of offering newer, less expensive laptops to all the component agencies, and now they have given up their individual contracts and individual hardware requirements. So, you know, it's the carrot rather than the stick. But understand that your relationship within a shared service organization, even if it's government to government, should look like a contract. And both parties will have responsibilities, and just like a contract, you can mod that on the fly. If you find something that becomes important that you've got to put in, all you have to do is, you know, reach a mutual agreement and add that in. Again, a relationship, yes, but I'm not going to ask you to trust me. I'm going to offer to give you the metrics. You tell me what's important to you, we'll measure that. I'll tell you what's important to me, we'll measure that. And then like like Tom said, you know, proved in with better service.
So just real quickly, because we're pressed on time, it goes back to performance. And when you're a fellow shared service provider, you're essentially a vendor. You're selling a service that you're providing for another fellow agency. So as Leslie mentioned earlier, you're treating them like a vendor. So if they're not performing up to your standards, then you have a discussion. When I was in VA, one of my earlier programs I ran, we had an agreement with HHS where unfortunately there was a lack of performance. So discussion to get back on track was needed and necessary to help. When I was in charge of construction for the National Cemetery Administration, Deputy Under Secretary, we had an agreement with the Corps of Engineers, and I was dissatisfied with the district being out my construction budget. So we had a discussion at the national level with the Corps of Engineers about how we build a better construction budget. So an interagency agreement or a service level agreement is just that. It's a contract. And if you've got vendor non-performance, you deal with it with a cure notice or show cause or termination for cause or termination of government's convenience. And I'd say it's the same with an interagency agreement or a service level agreement. There's a get-out clause, an opt-out for non-performance. And you can take your money back. Your problem is a, let's say, requirements person now, the program manager, is you're left with no service. So as Leslie mentioned earlier, you do that carefully, very considerate. You don't want to lose your investment.
Right. Right.
So it's a balance.
So I don't think I have much more to add other than I think it comes to performance metrics and setting your expectations on the onset, and that's not just for the individual providing the service, that's also for the customer. Customers should be in the business of changing their capabilities and requirements continually. They should try to, you know, it's both ways, I think.
Good morning. I'm Scott Cameron from the Interior Department. So accountability and performance have been big issues for us in grants management in particular. When Secretary Zinke came in, he discovered a third of his budget was going out in grants. And he asked the question, does anybody know what that money is being spent on? And then he asked the question, is there any way we can shape that spending so it aligns with the administration's priorities? And then he asked the question, does anybody know if those grants are actually producing any value on the ground? So we've been on a 16-month journey to try to answer those and related questions. And we look forward to working with you, Ray, and your colleagues at L&D to help us do a better job answering those questions.
So I would just encourage you to get engaged in the results-oriented accountability for grants capital, because that's really what it's about. We don't have a government-wide view of how well these awards are performing. I think at an individual program office level, they may know, and we have a lot of really great data out there right now, but we just have access to it for the standards in place to really compare across agencies or within agencies, so I encourage you to get engaged.
Okay. Final thing. Yeah, we had I've seen a similar thing in other agencies as well. This has nothing to do. There will never be a shared service that will address that. That is completely the mission of your agency. The outcomes driven by those program managers and matter of management within the department.
But we should at least have access to the data and know the answer. So I think that is where systems could help, actually.
Okay, so with that, I want to thank the panel, please. And so, you know, the next session, do you want to call upon the next session?
Sure. Well, first, thank you, everybody. The vast majority of you stayed the whole 2 hours. Amazing. Great questions. So the follow-up is, please fill out the evaluation forms. Put in any kind of questions you might have had that you didn't get a chance to ask. We will be following up with a summary of this, with the materials. This is part of a process. We are holding 6 of these with the idea that at the end we're going to present to Beth and to other folks our conclusions about what we've heard and perhaps some recommendations. Feel free to continue to be part of this process. The next session will be May 24th, again here at NAPA. It's on fiscal accountability. and how that plays into the whole shared services process. And then we're following that up with one on human capital shared services, and then one on acquisition in June and July. So we hope you'll stay a part of this process. We look forward to seeing you. Feel free to stay. There's plenty of food and mingle. Let's go. We understand.
So I'd like to describe Mike's one here.
Yes.
So there is, in the under spending bill, if you're up to and do shared services.
Yeah. Okay.
So
what, it's kind of ironic, huh? Well, I think I got it following.
I guess what I was hearing from Jeff was he was pointing my point to closing down. Was the closing down of the but Mike Swantura tells me,
you guys get
it. Oh, you know?
No, I don't know. I think way back.
Mike Swantura tells me that Pincus is alive and well and living at USD. And missions and the dogs and cats.
Who's running it?
Check with Jeff to see if he could represent sort of all three sides. Former agency, just maybe an official talking about what he did there. Now, since he uses it, processing, maybe a little bit about his work and the implementation.
Okay. I'll try to get a hold of you.